Viator is the world's leading travel experience marketplace, offering everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. Extensive options, ease of selection, and flexibility at your fingertips help make sure your time is wonderfully spent. Viator is the place to go to book experiences that will create long-lasting moments that make lifetime memories. And Viator has over 300,000 bookable experiences to choose from in over 190 countries. In fact, just last year, Viator helped my family put together this amazing adventure on the island of Kona, swimming with the manta rays, trying to avoid the barracudas, whatever your wildest dreams. If you can imagine it, Viator probably has an experience just for you. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in Viator's world of wonderful experiences. Viator. One site, over 300,000 experiences you'll remember.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage could help you get there for home loan solutions that fit your life. Well, Rocket can. I'm shocked. I can't believe the Denver Broncos, led by Russell Wilson, lost to Geno Smith and the Seattle Seahawks last night. And there were so many opportunities for Denver to win that game. You fumbled twice at the goal line, and I still don't understand what happened in the final minute of that ball game. I'm not a big supporter of Nathaniel Hackett. Last night, it definitely didn't help his case in the way that I view the Broncos heading into this season. Let's go out to the guest line right now. Welcome in a former Denver Bronco, won a Super Bowl with the organization, played 8 years in the NFL. Now does a great job on 104.3 The Fan on Afternoon Drive in Denver, and that's Tyler Palumbus. Tyler, appreciate the time. How are you?
Oh, always happy to be on with you, buddy.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and carving out a few minutes today. I know it's a busy day. Take me through your reaction to the decision by Nathaniel Hackett last night to kick that 64-yard field goal.
Just totally, entirely inexcusable. It's unbelievable. It's a job requirement. I don't know if your listeners have any clue about Vic Fangio's past, but it's a job requirement for the Denver Broncos head coach that you don't utilize your timeouts. You got to take those to the grave. So that's apparently the first thing on their checklist when they interview somebody. But it's entirely inexcusable. If you look at the probability of the two circumstances, so you've got a 4th and 5 with Russell Wilson. Over the course of Russell Wilson's career, and I don't know if Hackett had these numbers available on game day or not. He should have. Over the course of his career on 4th and 5, Russell Wilson converts a first down on 68.8% of those attempts. 7 out of 10 tries, he's going to pick up a first down on 4th and 5. Over the course of the history of mankind, not Brandon McManus. Brandon McManus is a hell of a kicker. It was a hell of a kick. He barely missed it wide left. But over the history of mankind, there's two kickers ever that have even lived on this earth that have kicked that kick and successfully made it from 64 yards. So you've got a minute on the clock. You've got 3 timeouts in the pocket. And you decide that your best chance of winning the game is going with the kick that 2 human beings that have ever existed have actually accomplished making that field goal, rather than letting the guy who you just gave $161 million fully guaranteed to go out there and do his job against his old foe when the stats tell you 7 out of 10 tries, he picks up the first down. It's just entirely inexcusable.
I know the coach makes a decision, but this is Russ's organization. This is his team now. Do you put any fault on Russell Wilson for not ensuring that, coach, what we're doing is wrong? Just give me the ball. It's 4th and 5. Let's go. I'll call a timeout while the clock was starting to tick down.
Man, that's a tough one. I put a little bit on Russ, not a lot on Russ. I was a little bit disappointed that, you know, the timeout did eventually get called after they let about 30 seconds go off the clock. They did call timeout. I was a little bit disappointed that Russ didn't fight for it harder. You can picture the Ravens with Lamar Jackson and Harbaugh last year. What was that, against the Chiefs, I think, where, you know, they kind of had that look with one another. Yeah. And they had the conversation. They went for it on 4th and long, and they got it. A little bit disappointed that Russ didn't fight for it. You have to default to your coach's decision. He's the head coach. He makes those decisions. You can't go out there with the offense when he wants the field goal team out there. But I played with Peyton Manning. I'm having a hard time picturing Peyton Manning have a coach, allow a coach to take the ball out of his hands in that situation. So a little bit disappointed that I didn't see a bigger fight out of Russell in that particular circumstance.
Tyler Palumbis here with us. As far as Nathaniel Hackett, I know everyone's going to be losing their minds today and thinking that he's going to be this awful coach, and I still don't know what he can be, even though the hire didn't overly excite me, but now they have Russell Wilson, which is the most important part. Does he need to now win back this locker room? Because there's a lot of noise right here, and you wonder how much of that noise then goes into the locker room and players start doubting this guy.
Yeah, you know, as a young coach, you're going to make mistakes. And the likelihood of Hackett losing a game for the Broncos this year was pretty high. You're never as good in your first year on the job as you are in year five. So these things were going to come. It was just so frustrating that it came with the last play of the first game of the season in such an obvious way. I don't think this is an end-all for Nathaniel Hackett. You've got an opportunity as a coach to go step up in front of your team and say, fellas, my bad. I'd like to do that one over. We got Russ. I got all the faith in the world in him. And hey, Brandon, I got all the faith in you too, man. You barely missed that kick. But, you know, hindsight 2020, I want to lean towards being a little bit more aggressive with my offense. But I think it takes a moment of being authentic, because if you're not transparent with your guys, they'll look through that, and then they'll start to doubt. They'll start to wonder. If you don't admit that you would like a do-over on it, then you're in that locker room, and you're like, do I trust this guy or not? Does he even know that he made a bad decision?
Tyler Palumbis here with us. What were your expectations for this team headed into this year, Tyler?
Sneak into the playoffs, and that's about it. Nothing crazy. I didn't expect them to go compete for an AFC championship. I didn't expect them to go win the AFC West. But you got Russell Wilson, and that should equate to about 11 wins. And that's probably the magic number in today's game with 17 games. You got to get to about 11 wins. That's what they should be. Now you put yourself in a hole, though. You got to win your home games. You got to split on the road. And this was a game that you should have won on the road. Now you got to find one down the road that, all right, you're going to win one in Kansas City? You're going to win one in Los Angeles? Where are you going to pick up an extra game on the road? That's a challenge they have. But be a playoff team, and I think most people will say you accomplished what you needed to this year. And then next year, go on a run.
Well, that's the thing. That's why this loss, even with the just buffoonery that we saw at the end of the game, is really demoralizing if you're a Broncos fan, is because any loss this year, if you play in the AFC West, it feels like two losses just because of how damn good this division's supposed to be.
Yeah, and actually, this might be a very weird year in which what happens outside the AFC West, it might actually matter more than what happens inside of it. I would imagine you're going to see a lot of teams kind of cannibalize themselves. I think L.A. will beat the Raiders. Well, we just saw that. Chargers just beat them. But I think the Raiders will beat the Chargers. You know, Kansas City will probably drop one. Denver will drop one. They're going to beat up on one another. So what you do outside of the AFC West, crazy to even say it, it actually might matter more this year.
What does Nathaniel Hackett need to do to keep his job for next year? Is he at danger if this year they don't make the playoffs of him losing his job? Because we all know, Tyler, Sean Payton's available, and he probably wants to get back into the game, and that's just where my mind went after last night.
Well, you never know with new ownership, so that's always a little bit – everybody's uneasy when you got a new boss. Not a good feeling when your old boss is not in the building. But Hackett's in good graces. He was hired without really any boss in the building. But things are so fresh. The probability of him losing his job seems insanely low to me. You're going to want to see this thing through. George Payton's done a great job as a GM. All the guys that he's drafted and brought in free agency, they've all been great. You got the quarterback figured out. You're likely going to want to give it a chance to succeed. So, you know, outside of Hackett having a disastrous year, winning four or five games, I think he's back all but no matter what happens this season.
You just hosted a show in Denver, your afternoon drive program. What was the fan reaction today?
Yeah, man, upset. It's the same conversation we were having last year with Vic Fangio. Head coach blew it. Head coach had an opportunity with clock management that it got too big for him in that particular moment. You know, it shouldn't have come down to it. Hackett said that today, and he's right. They did have two trips down there into the red zone where they're on the 1-yard line. They fumbled twice. Melvin Gordon fumbled once. Javonte Williams fumbled another time. You score on either one of those possessions, let alone both of them, like you should on the one-yard line, you're running away with that game, and you're not trying to kick a 64-yarder. So frustrating. A lot of good things in the game. Russell Wilson looked good. Didn't look great. He looked good, though. He looked fine. Offense, they put up a lot of yardage. And then on the defensive side, early struggles shutting down Geno Smith, as hard as that might sound, in the first half. In the second half, they did, and they did shut him down. So a lot of good things out of that game that just ends with nothing but frustration, because nobody can wrap their minds around why you thought a 64-yarder gave you the best opportunity to win the game.
Yeah, is the Geno Smith first half success, is that just rust? Like, what is that? Because going into this year, we knew about the Broncos, they have a good defense on paper.
They should. They got two decent pass rushers in Randy Gregory and Bradley Chubb, although neither one of them seemed to be able to stay on the field over the course of their career. You've got a one of the best safeties in the game in Justin Simmons. Kareem Jackson is a veteran back there. Your linebackers are pretty weak. But overall, it should be, you know, a top 10-ish defense in just about every single category. That's what the expectations were going into the season. So definitely some early concern when you saw Geno Smith moving the ball with ease in the first half.
Wrap it up with Tyler Palumbus. Who wins this division this year, in your opinion?
I'm going with the Chiefs until it's not the Chiefs, and especially after what happened this weekend. Shoot, the entire NFL looked bad. You saw upsets all over the place. You saw teams win that you never thought could. And then you saw the Chiefs go out there and just lay a butt-whipping down. You had two teams that looked dominant. You had the Bills and you had the Chiefs. So based off the evidence that we've got, the Chiefs are the top dog until they're not. You got Andy Reid, the Hall of Fame coach, and you got Patrick Mahomes. They're the ones to beat until somebody else is sitting on top.
Were you just screaming at your TV last night when that clock was winding down and you started to realize that they were going to kick the field goal there for 64 yards?
I just couldn't even believe what I was watching. I mean, could not believe it. I actually played for both the Seahawks and the Broncos, and my son was born when I was playing in Seattle. He's a diehard Seahawks fan. We had about half the house rooting for the Seahawks. We had about half the house rooting for the Broncos. My job tends to go with the Denver Broncos. When the Broncos play well, ratings are usually pretty good. So I was rooting for my job if I was rooting for anybody. So when we saw that happening, I mean, yeah, I'm just screaming at the top of my lungs, call timeout, call timeout. What are you doing? And then even after they called the timeout, I really thought even after that timeout, you let 30, 40 seconds go off the clock, they're still going to go out there and try to pick up a first down. Because as good as Brandon McManus is, you got to get within 56, 57 yards to make it realistic.
Yeah, I went to college with Brandon McManus. Like, I know how good of a leg that guy has. If it's 10 seconds left, I'm okay with the decision. But with over a minute left, it's just jackassery.
No, I mean, look, you got 10 seconds left. Yeah, I don't care if it's a 65-yarder. I don't care if it's a 70-yarder. Kick the field goal. It's your only shot. But you had other options. You had three timeouts in your pocket, and you had Russell Wilson when the stats tell you 7 out of 10 tries, he's going to pick up the first down on 4th and 5. Just totally inexcusable.
Last thing I'll ask you, because I know you got to run, Tyler Palumbus here with us, Super Bowl 50 champion with the Broncos, also played for the Seattle Seahawks, but 8 years in the league. I just had KJ Wright on about an hour ago, and he said he was not surprised that the Seahawks fans booed Russell Wilson before the game. I thought you would cheer him before the game, and then during the game, he's the enemy. You clearly boo him. Did the boos catch you by surprise?
No, definitely not. If you've been following what's coming out of Seattle, Russell is the bad guy. I mean, the Seahawks organization has definitely convinced the fan base that Russ is the bad guy. He demanded the trade. He wanted out of there. And Seahawks fans, that is a good fan base. That is the toughest place to play in the NFL. Not surprised by the boos. I'll give you one thing, even though I'm on the way out the door, and I'm sorry I do have to go. I'm coaching a flag football team. But the one thing that did surprise me, not the boos, if you look at all the teammates of Russell Wilson from the Seahawks on that Super Bowl team that they had, go look at their Twitter account.
Yeah.
Read what Richard Sherman is writing. Read what Cam Chancellor was writing. Read what Doug Baldwin was writing. these guys, they don't just not like Russell Wilson, they hate Russell Wilson. It's crazy to see the type of anger they had towards him. So that's the part, if you want to go down a wormhole, that's the part that surprised me.
What's the pregame speech tonight for the flag football game?
Well, it's just practice for tonight. Oh. So we got it. I'm not sure if I said game, but we got practice tonight. We got a big game coming up this weekend. And fellas, we don't want to go out there and drop a dumb one like the Broncos did. We'll be the best team, but we got to get prepared.
Yeah, don't be kicking any 64-yard field goals, all right? We appreciate it.
That's right. All right, buddy. We'll talk soon.
You got it. There's Tyler Palumbis. I always love him when he joins us on the Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So, Hickey, there we go. Two guests on this. Both guests said they're not surprised that the Seahawks fans did not cheer Russell Wilson before the start of the game. Now, I get it. It's a messy divorce. He wanted out. He didn't want any part of it. Some of that's on Pete. Some of that's on Russ. I'll say it again. Pete Carroll, he should be a hypnotist. He ran Russell Wilson out of Seattle. I do believe you could have found some middle ground. Sure, you did not need to throw the football 45 times a game with the interception rates the way that it was happening. You could have elected to throw the football more. You could have made Russ happy, and you could have found middle ground. But Pete Carroll, who played a role in Russell Wilson not wanting to be there anymore, now you look back at this, Pete Carroll, the way that he handled it leading into the game, I'll let you guys decide how you want to cheer or boo for him. He told the fans, basically, go boo the guy. I'll leave it up to you. Because if someone asked me that, should the fans cheer him before the game? You think the natural answer would be, yeah, cheer him. He's a legend. He did some great things for our franchise. No doubt about it. But by saying, I'll leave it up to the fans, that's him in an indirect way, but directly saying it. Yeah, go boo the guy. If you tell them, I'm not going to say, yeah, cheer for him, then you're not saying, oh, maybe you shouldn't boo or should boo, whatever. You are directing the fans indirectly, but also directly to go boo the guy. That's a great, and he won the game too. Pete Carroll, still a top 10 coach in this league. Pete Carroll, you laughed at me, Hickey. When I said he's still a top 10 coach in this league, he may have put on the best coaching job in week one. Think about this. The worst loss is Nathaniel Hackett and the Broncos. And there's some bad losses this past weekend. The Giants, they beat Tennessee. The Colts tied to the Texans. The 49ers somehow lost to the Bears. But maybe the best coaching job of the weekend, or one of the best coaching jobs of the weekend, was Pete Carroll. And one of the worst, Nathaniel Hackett. How about that, hot take, Icky? Wild stuff.
Look, if you can coach to have the other team fumble at the 1 yard line twice and then coach to have the other coach get a 64 yard field goal at the game on the line, then Pete Carroll is the best coach in NFL history. He surpasses Bill Belichick.
It just shows you. Well, he also made one of the more boneheaded decisions in NFL history. But it just shows you.
That he did.
It just shows you. You could have expectations. You could have potential. But you have to eventually do it in the NFL. And here was Hickey all offseason long. Pete Carroll's done. Pete Carroll's finished. Nathaniel Hackett's winning coach of the year. They're going to the Super Bowl. They're winning the Super Bowl. Nathaniel Hackett after 1 week, 0-1. Pete Carroll, 1-0. Hickey, jeez.
You just said it. 1 week.
Will finish the better record than the Seahawks, but the Broncos aren't making the playoffs. I said that before the year, and I'll say it now. After 1 week, okay. I feel great about it. And I laid the 6.5 points last night with the Broncos. I picked them in one of my survivor pools. I thought there was no way they were going to lose that game.
Russ maybe did it on purpose, despite you.
You think Russell Wilson's listening to, you never know.
And he goes, oh, this guy doesn't believe in us, but here he is picking us week one. Screw him. Screw his survivor pool. Screw his 6.5.
Oh, sorry.
Good for you, Russ.
Sorry, Mr. Unlimited. I have 2 entries in that survivor pool, so I'm still alive. I'm still alive. Go Lamar Jackson. Go Ravens, as they won this past weekend. Keeping me alive. And you know what? Doing 2 entries is the best decision I've ever made. Because how many people got eliminated this weekend? I know there's always upsets week one. I don't ever remember a week one like this, where you've had these many teams that are like, oh, that team stinks, and they end up winning. Usually you get like one or two a year. You're like three, four, five this year. And Atlanta, if they could have just held on to a lead, would have been another. So, what a start to week one of the NFL. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
That's right. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I feel like sometimes we try to make too many 30 for 30s where we just go, oh, we got to see this 30 for 30. We got to see that 30 for 30. But in the last 10 years or so, I would say one of the top five eventual 30 for 30s. Like if I had five wishes of who I need to see or what team I need to see 30 for 30 or what story you need to see 30 for 30, the Seattle Seahawks have to be one of them. Because you look at the Seahawks, and KJ Wright joined us at 7, at 7 p.m. Eastern. He even said, you know, we had so many great players, offense, defense, Pete Carroll, coach, Marshawn Lynch, the Legion of Boom, all the defensive linemen and linebackers as well. It was like there is some regret with how once that Super Bowl ended the way that it did, that it allowed them to have that team get derailed. And I don't think there was ever any recovering from a game like that because you're at the goal line and the perception inside that locker room is Pete's super protective of Russ. Russell Wilson is Pete Carroll's guy. He wanted Russ to have the moment when all those guys were so tight with Marshawn, and Marshawn should have got the football. And from there, when you throw the interception, and I know Cliff Averill has been very open about it on this show before where he goes, through understanding and through time, it was the right decision. It just wasn't executed. It's one of those moments that you wonder just what would have happened afterwards. Because you look back at those teams. Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, Richard Sherman. You have Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Cliff Averill, KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner. You just go on and on and on with how many great players were on that team. And then Tyler Palumbis of the Broncos just said it. You know, the former Denver Bronco and Seattle Seahawks. It was on the Seattle Seahawks Legion of Boom teams. But you hear some of the guys speak last night or just some of the way that shade was thrown Russell Wilson's way on social media. There's a lot of bad blood there. Now, when KJ Wright joined us, I asked him, how will you remember Russell Wilson as Seattle Seahawks? He said, the guy's a legend. So KJ Wright didn't play the way that some of the other guys, some of his other former teammates did play. But like Richard Sherman, you could tell last night. He showed it on Twitter. He was ecstatic that that game went down the way that it did. And that's like I even asked KJ, and this is before he gave us some of the answers about Russell Wilson. Like, you were there as a fan last night. Did you boo Russell Wilson? And he laughed and he goes, no, I was just cheering on the Seattle Seahawks because that's his team and I don't blame him. But you look at this, Ryan, that 30 for 30, unfiltered, and you know Richard Sherman never holds back. Earl Thomas, if he's not in bed with his brother and a bunch of strippers, well, I guess he doesn't hold back there. And he doesn't hold back when he speaks. Cam Chancellor. I can't wait to see how that 30 for 30 kind of goes down. And how whenever that does happen, how everyone voices their side, because there's going to be a lot of transparency. And honestly, you know, who probably be the least transparent of them all, Russell Wilson, because Russ, you know, will just say whatever the right thing is. I don't think Russ will stir up any controversy there.
Him controversy? He is not one to stir the pot.
He's Mr. Unlimited.
Sure.
He's like a politician.
Oh, that he is. There's two things. One, it's ironic that Pete Carroll's treatment early on of Russell Wilson is what, you know, if you want to say, caused this divide.
Was the demise at the end.
And now you look back and see, you know, their relationship was, you know, soured, and that kind of caused Russell Wilson to leave town. But also, too, like, no one's going to admit it, but the overall theme, ego killed this team.
Like you could say, oh, Russell Wilson. You could say all the, you know, the offense or Pete Carroll didn't manage him right. They wanted their ego stroked. They wanted, whether it was the defense to get more credit, whether it was Russell Wilson to get more love than he thought he was getting. In the end, ego did really unravel this entire, what should have been a dynastic-like team.
100%. You're right. The defense is what made that team so successful and dominant because the defense set the tone. The defense was so loquacious. The defense was so aggressive. And that did resonate throughout an entire locker room that made them so great. And you look at it, that swagger the defense brought. Remember early on when Brady walked up to them? I've heard Richard Sherman tell the story when Brady went to Seattle and played the Seahawks. And supposedly Brady walked up to some of the corners before the game. He goes like, oh, who are you guys? We'll talk after the game. And then Richard Sherman ran up to him after the game. And that's the whole you mad bro thing. Like that stuff is what, even early on, before you really won anything, is what made Seattle so great because they had the confidence. Then you win, and not only win, they beat the living snot out of one of the great offenses in the Denver Broncos. That game was over literally on the first snap of the game when it went out of the end zone over Peyton Manning's cabeza. But you are 100% right. The ego of that team, what made them great, also was their biggest detriment. Because the defense knew that that was their team. And then they got annoyed in the second Super Bowl when Marshawn Lynch didn't get the football because they thought they did enough against Tom Brady, even though you got to be fair there. If you're one of the all-time great defenses, which they want to claim they are, when you have a 10-point lead, I know it's Tom Brady who's God, but you can't be choking up a 10-point lead in that spot. I know everyone forgets that. They were up by 10. I think it was 24-14. Brady threw a bad pick, but they're up by 10, and Brady comes on back. Now, everyone forgets about that because of what happened at the end of the game, not handing off the football to Marshawn Lynch, but the ego's all around, even for Russ. Russ has an ego. I know we say Russ is Mr. Unlimited and all that. Russ has an ego. And Russ's ego knowing and his insecurity knowing he wasn't the guy when they won that ring is part of the reason why now he's no longer there. And you're so dead on when you say how Russ and Pete was so protective of Russ, and at the end, it was the beginning was conservative. At the end, Russ wanted to be aggressive. They ultimately, the guys that were the tightest together on that team, coach, quarterback, ultimately started feuding. And now most of those guys aren't a part of the team in terms of when Russ wanted out. Over the last year or two, when this stuff really started to go south, you know, really other than Bobby Wagner in terms of the household names. And I think a lot of those guys, with the respect that they have for Pete, go, see, Pete, all those things that you were defending and you being a great coach, they kind of then take it out on the quarterback. When they do that 30 for 30, they probably won't do this, but this is, if I was the producer, this is how I would do it. I'd make it a round table. I get Russ, I get Pete, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas. Or honestly, I guess you know what, you have to have three guys in a room together. Or four guys in a room together. Marshawn, Richard Sherman, Pete Carroll, and Russell Wilson. And let's hash it all out and put it all on the table. That's how if I'm the producer of that 30 for 30, whenever that will come out and they'll have that idea. You got to have at least like 4 to 8 guys from that team, the big time names, in a room together. Because I feel like there's a lot of things that have been talked about, reported, all that. And even some players are showing on Twitter that there's a lot of truth to it. I would kind of want that to be a boxing match. And let's just hash it all out instead of you have Richard Sherman getting an isolated interview, then Pete Carroll isolated interview, and Russell Wilson. Or maybe you go the Jordan route, where you have all the things being said and then give it to Russ and have Russ respond off the iPad.
Viator is the world's leading travel experience marketplace, offering everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. Extensive options, ease of selection, and flexibility at your fingertips help make sure your time is wonderfully spent. Viator is the place to go to book experiences that will create long-lasting moments that make lifetime memories. And Viator has over 300,000 bookable experiences to choose from in over 190 countries. In fact, just last year, Viator helped my family put together this amazing adventure on the island of Kona, swimming with the manta rays, trying to avoid the barracudas. Whatever your wildest dreams, if you can imagine it, Viator probably has an experience just for you. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in Viator's world of wonderful experiences. Viator, one site, over 300,000 experiences you'll remember.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. For your daily news brief, we get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, news brief time. We start with the biggest story of the day, and that's what did go down on Monday Night Football last night between Denver and Seattle. We start things off with the bozo, I guess, Nathaniel Hackett. What do they do on Bill Reiter's show? It's Bum of the Week?
Bum of the Week.
Nathaniel Hackett has to win Bum of the Week.
He's pretty much a lock on a Monday, which is scary.
You know who won Bum of the Week 2 weeks ago, I think it was?
Who's that?
The Dr. Teal's publicist. Bill informed me that Bum of the Week went to the Dr. Teal's publicist because Bill thought it was pretty weak what the publicist did to me or did to the interview. Now, I handled it the way that I could only handle it. Okay, that's fine. We'll talk about Dr. Teals. I'm a professional. I've done this, you know, for now more than a few years. I know how to interview. I'll ask the question that I still want to ask, and then we'll get to your little product. Okay? So I do appreciate our friend, Bill Reiter, used to host in this time slot, now Mr. Big Time from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern on many of the same CBS Sports Radio affiliates, giving the publicist the Bum of the Week. I'm not mad at the publicist. I just thought it was funny. But Nathaniel Hackett, right, has to be the early leader in the clubhouse on a Tuesday for Bum of the Week, Mr. Hot Take Hickey.
Oh, he's a lock. I mean, it would be
You actually should win Bum of the Week.
For what?
You said this guy was going to be Coach of the Year candidate.
It's one game. Not a great start. It's the worst that you possibly have. But what's worse, the guy who had faith in him or the guy making the bonehead decision?
Both.
Guy who made the bonehead decision way worse than what I said.
I don't know. That was some pretty blind confidence that you had.
Blind, yes. There's more confidence in Russell Wilson than Nathaniel Hackett, I'll tell you that. You have my reasoning. If you're a team in Super Bowl contention in year number one, you're going to be in the head coach of your conversation.
So you still believe the Broncos are going to be a Super Bowl contender this year, and Nathaniel Hackett will be in the coach of the year conversation at the end of the year?
Oh, yeah. No, you think I'm leaving after one game?
Okay. What's the punishment if Nathaniel Hackett does not finish in the top three for coach of the year for you?
There is no punishment.
Oh, come on. You can't just say that and we can't hold you accountable.
What do you mean?
Let's make a little bet. If he finishes in top three in the voting, you'll have to do something. If he finishes outside the top three, and if he finishes inside the top three, I'll do something. I think we should put something on the line here. Now, it's not going to be dinner because you stole me a dinner and you still haven't ever paid up on that, you cheap bastard.
So, again, I leave it at that. Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll think of something. I don't know. Maybe I get to pelch you with tomatoes or something.
I'm okay.
Or calamari.
Pass on that.
Calamari, since you love calamari so much.
I don't like calamari.
You have to eat calamari.
I'd rather not.
Delicious. Delicious, delicious, delicious. All right, let's get to that bum of the week. Probably that will be heard in the Bill Reiter show later in the week. Nathaniel Hackett and why he didn't feel confident that the offense could convert on 4th and 5.
4th and 6, for me, during that time, we had been just moving it slightly. They weren't moving it with big chunks. I think we had just given up a sack right before that. So wanted to be sure that we took a chance when we had a chance. And I felt confident in him.
He sounds nervous, by the way.
Talks very fast. He's like me.
SVP last night, because Nathaniel Hackett was talking for 2 minutes. He goes, all right, we're going to let Coach take a breath, come up for some air. And we'll go to Pete Carroll. That's how he transitioned to move on from Nathaniel Hackett. This is Nathaniel Hackett from today, I guess, saying that he should have gone for it on 4th and 5.
You know, looking back at it, we definitely should have gone for it. Just not, you know, one of those things. You look back at it and you say, of course we should go for it. We missed the field goal. But in that situation, we had a plan. I mean, we had a plan. We knew that 46 was the mark. We were third and 15, I think, third and 13. I'm more upset about that play before it, to lose yards, to be able to, you know, getting that there would have definitely been better to be able to call that same play and get extra yards. But he dumps it out to Javonte. Javonte makes a move, goes a lot farther than I think we had anticipated. We were expecting to go for it on fourth down, and then you hit the mark.
Yeah, that wasn't very genuine. You could even tell it was kind of fake in the beginning, where he goes, yeah, of course we'd go for it. I don't buy what Coach is selling right there. He knew he had to say that today. He's not getting an Oscar, though, for the acting that he did perform, if I'm a part of the Academy. Russell Wilson on if he agrees with Nathaniel Hackett's decision to kick the 64-yard field goal.
I believe in Coach Hackett. I believe in what we're doing, you know, and believe in everything. You know, anytime you can try to find a way to make a play on fourth and five, that's great too. But also, I don't think it was the wrong decision. You know, I think he can make it. Obviously, in hindsight, you know, we didn't make it. But if we were in that situation again, I wouldn't doubt whatever he decided.
Yeah, Russ, it's the wrong decision. Let's just all admit it. Let's put the big boy pants on. And also, in that moment, you're worth $240-something million on that new contract that you just got. I don't care if you went up to the coach and said, hey, we should go for it, and he says no. You say, no, coach, bleep you, we're going for it. So I put some of that on Russ, too. Russell Wilson on if the Seattle fans booing him bothered him last night.
No, it didn't bother me.
It
was, you know, this is a hostile environment. It's always has been. I didn't expect him to give a round of applause every once in a while. You know, like I would say, you know, I gave everything I had every day here, every day. And anybody says anything else, you know, they're completely wrong.
Let's be real. During the game, I'm not expecting them to cheer you. But before the game, I would have thought the cheers would have happened, but Pete Carroll did a great job in making it clear that Russ wanted out, don't cheer for him, and we need you hype before the game, and we'll honor him in like 10 years or something like that. And by the way, Russ, come on, that definitely didn't have to bother you. Pete Carroll did not expect the Broncos to kick the field goal on fourth down. Glad to see Pete was like everyone else in America last night.
We'd win the game. You know, they could have won it. It wasn't that far off. He kicked it far enough, didn't he? It was far enough to go. Yeah, and I was surprised. I wasn't thinking that. We were all planned up and ready to win a game on fourth down.
I love the way that Pete set that up. He knows that it went the distance. It was just wide left. And he goes, did it go the distance? Oh, yeah, it did. Yeah, you know, I wasn't expecting them to go for it there, but glad it missed. I love that from Pete Carroll. That was great. Basically sidestepping some decision by Coach Nathaniel Hackett. What the heck is he doing? Geno Smith played a good first half, gets a W, and he has a little message for the haters courtesy of ESPN.
They wrote me off. I ain't right back, though. That's the problem. I ain't right back. Let's go.
That's a great line. They wrote me off, but I didn't write back. So I guess he's saying they wrote me off, but I didn't listen and I didn't respond. That's the way that I interpret that. I've never heard someone say it, though, that way. Geno Smith says scoring the first touchdown was a huge momentum swing in their direction in favor of Seattle.
So important, so important. You know, the league, NFL, you never know when you know, the momentum's going to shift. But anytime you're at home, you know, anytime, you know, you want to start out that first drive, you want to go down there and score. And, you know, especially if you get the ball first, because, you know, statistics say that if you don't, you know, wins aren't in your favor. So just going down there and getting the crowd excited.
Let's get to a great interview. This is our pal James Palmer of the NFL Network interviewing Shelby Harris. He used to be on the Broncos, now a part of the Seahawks. He was in that Russell Wilson trade. Listen to Shelby Harris after the game.
It's a 1-0 statement. You know what I mean? We come out here, everybody doubted us. Everyone made this about Russ. You feel me? We made this about the Seattle Seahawks. Come out here. You know, play good ball for four quarters, come out with the W. Nobody expected us to win except us. It's always going to be us.
Defensive line made a statement in the red zone. Talk about the statement you guys made causing multiple fumbles inside the five.
Well, that's what happens when you trade one of your D linemen to the other team. We sit here and make plays, all of us. And that's what happens when you get two goal line stops. Right there, a win. Can't draw it up any better than that, man.
How much did this mean to you personally?
All I have to say is, let's ride.
That's great at the end. Now, don't get me wrong. The Broncos get rid of Shelby Harris 10 times out of 10 to go get Russell Wilson. But I never thought of it the other side, how Shelby Harris may have thought, yeah, it's slap in the face that I got traded. I like being a part of the Denver Broncos. Here is Broncos legend, Peyton Manning. We don't even acknowledge the first team he played for, neither does he, along with Eli Manning and Shannon Sharp on the Manning broadcast last night, courtesy of ESPN, reacting to Nathaniel Hackett not calling a timeout.
We got three timeouts, E. I might use one right here, E. Let's use one. Let's talk about this one. Let's talk about this one. They're going to try to draw. They can try to draw him off sides. Might try to draw him off sides, E.
You don't have that much time. Dummy snap count. Well, you don't want to waste that much time, I don't think. Running a play. They look unsettled. Sutton doesn't know what he's doing. Hurry up. Time out.
What the? So you just burned 30 seconds to call a timeout?
A lot of time wasted right there to call a timeout, Pate.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because even now, if you get 5 yards, I mean, you still got 2 timeouts, but you gotta get some yardage.
They're gonna kick it.
Kick what?
They're kicking it right here?
Kicking the field goal, right here.
The field goal.
Hold on. Let me see how far this is.
63 yarder.
What?
You know what I love about the most? That's three great NFL minds. The Manning brothers and Shannon Sharp. And they reacted like everyone else. Call timeout. It never processed to any of us that they were going to kick the field goal until they put Brandon McManus on the field. That's the wild part about it. Jerry Jones says Dak Prescott may be back sooner than expected. This courtesy of 105.3 The Fan and one of Jerry Jones' 9,000 interviews that he does each and every week on that station.
Nobody knows those timelines good, but if we thought he wasn't going to be ready to go for four games, until after four games, we would put him on IR. We're not doing that. We think he can come in and play, so we don't want to not have him out there practicing. We want him getting prepared, and we'll see how he handles this thing, how it heals.
And let's get one more from Jerry Jones, just reiterating that he hopes Dak could return within a month.
We won't be putting him on IR, which means that we want him to be a consideration for playing within the next four games.
Isn't that just false hope?
Which is par for the course for Jerry, right?
That's the drama. Yeah, he may be back. We're hoping he's going to be back. Yesterday it was 6 to 8 games, and now he could be back in less than 4.
We joked about Jerry's math yesterday. 1 + 1 = 3. Matt's starting to bite him a little bit.
Yeah, he's saying, all right, it's supposed to be out 6 to 8 weeks. So I'll just say 1 + 1 = 3. Okay, he's back in 3 weeks. Therefore, it's not going to be out 4 games, and we don't have to put him on the IR. That makes sense. No, it doesn't. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio, coming on back, talking Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson.
Bridge Bank offers end-to-end escrow and a digital paying agent solution for servicing M&A transactions with optimal speed and transparency. Benefit from our expertise and in-depth offerings. Bridge Bank, a division of Western Alliance Bank. Bridge Bank. Be bold. Venture wisely.